Empower Radio presents Out of the Fog. Join intuitive guide and spiritual teacher Karen Hager for lively, positive conversation with light workers, healers, and dynamic wisdom keepers. Get ready for inspiration and connection. This is Out of the Fog on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Karen Hager.
Hello and welcome to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. Each week at this time, we gather for spiritual conversation and enlightening guests. I want to spark your spirit and ignite your soul. I want to get you moving from stuck to unstuck, out of fear and into love. I am very glad you're here. Time and distance are no barrier to energy, and that means that no matter when you're listening, no matter how you found us, you're here for a reason. And I hope something you hear in the next hour opens a door for you, lights your path, and helps you move forward. Have you ever come to a place in your life where you realize, I can't go on this way. I have to make some changes. And that happened to me about 6 years ago, and it's a big part of why I'm doing the work that I'm doing now. My guest on today's show is Joe Tillman, and his personal story of coming to that realization, things can't go on this way, not only changed him forever, but now changes the lives of those he works with and teaches. Joe's here to talk about conscious evolution, connection, and how we as humans are changing. Joe welcomes your questions, and if you'd like to connect with him on the air, if you have questions about his work, any of the things we're about to talk about, you can join us at 248-809-3475 to join the conversation and connect with us on the air. That's 248-809-3475. And I'll introduce you to Joe in just a minute, but first, would you please head over to fogcitypsychic.com and click on Everything. I was almost late to meet Nate, who is the producer of this show today, because I was trying really quickly to do some updates to the website. I've got some new classes out there. There's new scheduling stuff for the radio show. I did those updates very quickly. So if you go over to fogcitypsychic.com and it looks like I've done things myself, yes, it's because I have done them myself. There are new details up for you, so click on the Out of the Fog radio logo, new details up for you about who's coming on the show and where you can hear me on the air. On the classes page, you can sign up for the March 30th online gallery reading, and on April 3rd, healer Lisa Tunney and I are offering a free class called From Fear to Grace. This is a class that shares some very practical tools to help you shift your energy to move from fear to grace. It is absolutely free to all. We want you there. And you can get details at fogcitypsychic.com/change. Fogcitypsychic.com is also a good place to find out more about me and even book a private intuitive session with me if you're so inclined. And now, Joe Tillman is a self-realized indigo child who was born behind the veil. He served as a combat flight paramedic on active duty service for 4 years. And after completing his enlistment with an honorable discharge, this highly decorated veteran returned home only to face a very tough road ahead. His journey included battling drug addiction as well as several out-of-body and near-death experiences that have continued to shape his destinies to this day. Joe believes there's nothing more important than the expansion of one's consciousness. His mission is to help ignite and unite all souls through a unified field of love and oneness. You can find out more about Joe and his work at josephanthonytillman.com. Joe, welcome to Out of the Fog.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's great to be here.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful to connect with you. And I think to get into your story here, maybe the best thing we can do is begin at the beginning. You say that you were born behind the veil. What does that mean?
Okay, great question. I was raised in a very strong Sicilian-Italian family with very strong tradition. And all I know what I've studied and I know what my experience is, and I'll give you a little bit of both. when I was born and my mother's water broke, I was actually born at 8 p.m. during a Bears game. And when I came out, I had a pearl opaque veil covering my face, as reported by my grandmother and my mother. Now, the only reason that really stood out to me is my grandmother always made it a point to tell me that you were born behind the veil. And, you know, she had five grandkids, and she always said, don't you worry about Joey, he'll be okay. I was always raised. I did find out there is a genetic component to it. So on my maternal side of my mom's grandfather's dad, basically was born behind the veil. His name was Mike, and he ultimately was one of the partners that started the Dominick's food chain, which is prevalent throughout the Midwest. So being born behind the veil was always traditionally synonymous with things will come to you, that you connect to life in a visceral way, that you're very psychically sensitive, that we're healers, we're intuitive. And I can echo that through my experience, because all my life I was thinking about consciousness and space and, you know, the fact that we're all spirit. And, you know, I had a unique ability to connect with animals, plants, other people, still do. And so that just always stuck out there for me. And I've always been intuitive, very psychic, very empathic. And I really take on other people's emotions around me. So part of my work throughout my life, I was a combat flight medic, as you said. Through my drug addiction, ended up becoming a drug and alcohol counselor. And so I'm a humanitarian at heart. And my name, Joseph Tillman, literally means he who will add to the earth. Joseph means he who will add. Tillman means of the earth, tillers of the land, farmers. And so I'm a firm believer that we come in on a certain vibrational capacity. And so being a born healer was something that was always natural to me. I was always on the grid and connected. And so when my mom would think of me, I would call her. When something, she'd have a headache, I would call her. Her, my brother, and myself were like the buddy system, because we were all we had until my great stepfather came along. But we've always been a small family and very close, so very psychically connected. There's a lot of folklore behind being born behind the cult, too. I'm not sure if you want me to cover any of that or...
Well, it is a very old tradition, isn't it, that those are special children, as you're saying, psychically connected, gifts as healers, gifts as seers, right? Doesn't it symbolize kind of a different kind of sight?
It does, and a lot of what's synchronous about it is it's kind of like the Indigo Child Revolution. The whole thinking is that, you know, we're in a grand cycle of time that began according to the Egyptian and Mayan calendar that predates humanity, but the cycle began in 3111 BC and culminated in 1221-2012. And so many people believe, starting from the 70s, that indigo children were being born to help birth and facilitate a new way of living, pioneers of a new way of living. And so it happens to about one in every 200,000 births. It's not delegated to any sect, race, creed, religion. It happens everywhere around the world. There is a genetic component to it. It tends to run in family lines, but it's more common than people might realize, which is pretty amazing.
That's very special and very rare, at least to my way of thinking. Now, you were talking about how you've had this psychic connection, this kind of this awareness since childhood. With that deep connection and picking up the feelings of others, how was it to be serving in combat, to be around so much strong emotion and of course death?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Karen. And part of what I did, the reason that I joined the service is my mom worked three jobs to raise my brother and I, to give us the best opportunity she could afford us in life. My brother's 18 months older than me, and my mom basically put both of us through Fenwick High School in Oak Park, which at the time was an all-boys high school. It was about $5,000 a semester, and she did it on her own without the presence of my father, and sacrificed 20 years of her youth to put everything into my brother and I. So she's been my hero from day one, She's the strongest archetype in the universe. She embodies the unconditional love of a mother, of Mother Earth, of Gaia. It is just breathtaking and amazing, but I did not want her to have to pay for my college, so I joined the military. And I also had enough foresight at that time to realize that I don't want to be killing people, so I decided to become a medic, in which case I decided to grab an aid bag over a gun. So no matter where, what type of situation I was in, my duty was to save lives, not take them. So I felt good about that, that I was a tool for God, essentially, to work through me to help save people's lives.
And when you came back, things got a little bit rough, didn't they?
They certainly did. You know, as I mentioned, in the, you know, I was 17 when I went in. I was very impressionable. I finished active duty. I finished and completed my enlistment after 4 years on active duty in the U.S. Army. And I came home, and it was very much a time warp. I'd been gone for 4 years. All the good friends that I grew up with in my Catholic schools were off to college or moved away or at current careers. And inversely, the brotherhood that I left behind in the military, the camaraderie, was all back in Colorado, which was my last duty assignment. So I had a really vulnerable period, which lasted about 18 months. And it was at the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people, so you would think. Until 10 years later, when we realized that hindsight is 20/20, and we realized that every action has an equal and opposite reaction, it's only now that I'm so grateful for the experience, because we all have the ability, out of the most disastrous situation, to flip that around, swing the pendulum, and bear very good fruit from the other side. It's just up to us as to how we can get there and how to apply that.
That's very important for people to know,
So, yes, ma'am, I was, you know, very vulnerable, and I'd never done drugs, and I was at the wrong place at the wrong time and in a weak moment. And the night with my near-death experience, there are just overwhelming, miraculous synchronicities that there's just no chance in the universe that that happened by chance. So I know we'll get into a little bit of that story, but you know, it was about a six-month struggle where it started out with smoking pot and, you know, just kind of being lost. And what I realized is that this is what happens for many of us U.S. Army veterans or military veterans that come back. The military does the best they can. They have something called TAPS, which is the Transitional Assistance Program Services, which does a pretty good job at trying to get our soldiers back down to earth to reintegrate them back into society. But as we all know, our military is stretched unbelievably thin. We're asking way more of them than we've ever asked from them in our history. And whereas a hardship tour was considered 1 year, now they're going back for 2 and 3 tours, which is, you know, creating a lot more baggage that people have to deal with once they get back.
Yes. Yes. And as you came back and were having that difficult transition in, and you fell into drug addiction, stepped into drug addiction, what was it that led you to this near fatal? Did you clinically die? What happened?
I did clinically die. I was dead for 2 minutes, and I got resuscitated. And you know, I could tell the story pretty quickly. It's pretty pretty important to hear as the lesson I tried to learn and apply it, and continue to let others benefit from it, but. You know, I was out like any other night of the week. When I got back from the military, I was 21. I was living with my mom, and I just happened to pop in the house. I was not under the influence, and I said, Mom, I'll be back in a couple hours, just like any other night over the last 6 months, because I had been out of the military about 6 months at this point, and that 6 months was culminating into this climax of a horrible event. Mm-hmm. But the second I left the house, my mother was overcome with a panic attack, which in 37 years, it's never happened before, never happened since. She was overcome with a panic attack. My brother at the time was a Melrose Park police officer. He never worked midnights. He happened to be on a midnight shift. And my mom said, Mike, you got to find your brother. I'm not sure who he's with, but you got to find the car right away. And we grew up in Melrose Park, Illinois, which is a town of about 30,000 people. It's a subdivision 20 minutes northwest of the city. It's a very old Italian community. And he found the car within a matter of 5 minutes. And in the amount of time that it took from when I left my house and said goodbye to my mom to the time that my brother found the car was a matter of 7 to 10 minutes. In that amount of time, I had taken an opiate and a benzodiazepine, basically a Xanax and an opiate, heroin, which was snortable at the time. And it was the worst thing I could have ever done, but it was put in front of me. And, you know, I can't blame anybody for it. It was my decision. But, again, I was at the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people, and I made the wrong decision. And it almost killed me. Mm-hmm. My brother found the car. He pulled over the car. I'm very out of it. I'm under the influence, and I'm not knowing exactly what I'm saying. And my brother's fighting with me. Joe, get out of the car. I'm telling him, Mike, go away, get out of here. And he said, Joe, get out of the car or I'm going to arrest your friends. And for whatever reason, that got me out of the car. Hmm. It got me into his car. He had a squad car and he started driving. You know, what's wrong? I've never seen you like this. He's slapping me. Do you need orange juice? Do you need coffee? And I stopped breathing. And so we were between two hospitals, the Gottlieb Hospital and Westlake Hospital, and he kicked at lights and sirens and called my mom, and they rushed me into Westlake Hospital. And thankfully, one of the RNs that was working that night was a pretty young guy, and he realized here's a 21-year-old kid with no trauma. I'm willing to bet it's an overdose. So he immediately started pushing naloxone hydrochloride, which is an opiate antagonist. It reverses the effects of opiates in your system, and they started coating me. Mm. Now, as they're going through this process, I raise up out of my body, and I'm watching them right on the board, 12:01 a.m., epinephrine, 1 to 1,000, 3 milligrams. So I'm a witness. I'm up in the ceiling tile. I could see the clock. I could see the entire room. I could see every perspective in the room. And all of a sudden, I flew out of my body, and I'm now orbiting the star or an orb sitting on a cotton ball or a cloud. And the light was it was sunlight. It was starlight, but it wasn't a blinding light. It was an all-encompassing, loving light. And a voice as clear as day, you know, as I'm orbiting this star in a timeless, motionless, dimension, I'm being told you did not complete what you came here to complete. It's your choice. You can come back, but there are no shortcuts. You will have to do this all over again. And at that point, I started seeing holographic projections of things that had happened, past, present, future. I saw, you know, that my brother was yet to get married and he was going to have a boy and a girl. I saw that I, you know, had life to live. I saw myself working as an inspirational speaker, as a motivational speaker. I saw images of past, present, and future. And the overwhelming common denominator was my family, my mom. And I could not make a selfish decision, although that was pure nirvana, pure heaven, pure bliss, pure ecstasy, one unified field of consciousness and love. And I very much wanted to stay. But I knew it wasn't my time, and after I made the decision to come back is when I flew back into my body, and I was restrained to the bed. It was the first time that I came back into my body and was aware that I'm in the emergency room, and my family was crying around me. You know, I had endotracheal tube breathing down my lungs. I had IVs in. They had indwelling catheter in, so I wouldn't pee on myself, and I mean, you name it, they pretty much had every machine hooked up to me that you can hook up to you. And the amazing story is this. As a paramedic, I know that I have 4 to 6 minutes to get somebody to the hospital before a hypoxia occurs, in which you start lacking oxygen in the brain, in which point you're facing serious brain damage, if not vegetative state. I believe I had lack of oxygen longer than 4 to 6 minutes.
Wow.
And I was graciously spared, and a miracle happened, multitudes of miracles in one night that happened to save my life. And that's honestly one story among many.
Wow.
You know, that addiction turned into a 5-year nightmare. And, you know, I pretty much got beat up, robbed. I faced many near-death experiences and many out-of-body experiences due to fear. But at the end of the day, I think the lesson is this. I'm grateful that I was brought to my knees immediately, and brought to my knees, relatively speaking, as quick in geologic times of being 5 years. Mm-hmm. The drug of choice could have been alcohol, and in which we've got to live with that for the rest of our lives, and it kills you slowly day by day, where my drug will take your life instantly. Mm-hmm. And so I lost everything in my life pretty quickly, and had a very arduous path of doing whatever it took to get through it. Because number one, my mom raised me better than that. Number two, the military honed me into a warrior stronger than that. Number three, I'm here as a healer. I'm here as a messenger. I'm here as a guardian angel. And my experience was intended for me to carry that cross so that I can help other people carry their own in their own lives.
And you are able to, I think, because of all your experiences, meet people where they are, no matter what they're going through. And sometimes that point of connection, Joe, that being able to be with people right where they are, that is where real healing, real change can begin.
Exactly. Exactly. It's, you know, this is an experiential place. This is a planet school Earth. You know, it's one layer, one sphere, one dimensional existence among an infinite multitude of infinite existences. And in this existence, we have the ability to experience things like arguments, loving our family, you know, personal ambition, career growth. We can do things in this experience so that we can actually experience who we are. And I believe our purpose is here for the universe to become conscious of itself through our experiences. And
for
so
I'm so sorry, that stopped me right there. For the universe to become conscious of itself through our experiences.
Yes. Everything is connected. Everything is built of atomic material. 90% of the most abundant element in the universe is hydrogen. The planet's 3/4 hydrogen. Our bodies are 78% hydrogen. Water is divine energy. Water has memory. If anyone has ever looked into Dr. Emoto's water crystal study, you can actually see, and everyone should go YouTube that when they get a moment, you will see the true effect that words have on other people. So you can see what I love you looks like. You could see what the words love and gratitude look like. They're all each individual snowflakes that are all uniquely different, yet it's all from the same source. It's all love. It's all snow. It's all pure, infinite, divine intelligence.
And as you help, I'm very aware we've got a couple minutes here before we go to break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you some big questions like, why are we here? What are we doing? How come? What's it all for? How do we connect? But in this couple of minutes we have before the break, Joe, what would you say to someone who was maybe struggling and didn't feel that the universe cared anything about their experience, didn't feel that connection, didn't feel any bigger than just themselves having a pretty miserable time?
You know, I really think that's what this is all about. You know, it's been said time and time again, but we are spiritual beings having a human experience, not human beings having a spiritual experience. Right now, we're trapped in five-sense reality. We're trapped in our genetic biologic spacesuits, which makes things like racism the most insane thing, discrimination, because just because your spacesuit looks different or has a different color than mine, all we are pure consciousness. We're all built of atoms. We're all built of quantum intelligence. We're all part of the source. We're all part of that oneness. And we just need to learn the universe focuses and mirrors what we dwell on, not what we're asking for. So we really have to learn what the laws of the universe are. And I think I can articulate that in a way that's tangible for most people, because I've learned through experience. So we could talk about that maybe a little bit when we get back from break.
That sounds wonderful. You are listening to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager. My guest is Joe Tillman, and you can find out more about Joe, his story, and his work. Check out his Justin.tv channel, too, by the way, please, at josephanthonytillman.com. It's Out of the Fog with Karen Hager. We'll be right back after this.
Before there were computer games and HDTV, cram courses and teaching to the test, there was this thing called imagination. A tool so powerful, it could transport kids on the most amazing journeys of their lives, from outer space to center field at Yankee Stadium. It is for these journeys that Destination Imagination was created, an extraordinary after-school program in creativity and teamwork for every child. At Destination Imagination, teams are formed and challenges are met with a whole lot of imagination. And while we can't guarantee it'll get your kid into Harvard or onto American Idol, we're pretty sure that Destination Imagination will be the most important journey they make this year. Maybe any year. Parents, teachers, start a Destination Imagination team by calling 888-321-1503 or visit destinationimagination.org. That's destinationimagination.org.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's a helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home. I'm home. And I love it. I'm home. I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home. I'm home. Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
And now back to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager on Empower Radio. EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. My guest on today's show is Joe Tillman. He is sharing his transformational story of how he survived death, how his consciousness was expanded, and now he uses what happened to him, his knowledge, his awareness, to help other people transform their lives. You can find out more about Joe and his work at josephanthonytillman.com. Joe, welcome back.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm still happy you're here. Yes, we had a commercial break, but I'm still glad you're here. and I love what you were sharing before the break. And right as we went into that commercial, you were beginning to talk about how the universe mirrors what we dwell on. And so in order to maybe manifest, in order to transform, in order to connect, we need to understand the laws of the universe. But What does that mean? What are the laws of the universe?
That's a really good question. Looking at nature, nature has fundamental sacred geometry, which extends from everything from sunflower plants to our galaxies. And it's an expression through hyperdimensional physics of sacred geometry. That sacred geometry is called the golden ratio in the Fibonacci cycle. Both are mathematical quantum equations that basically explain the nature of life. So we have to look at, we connect to the infinitely small, we connect to the infinitely big. We are the microcosm of the universe, and the old Hermetic teachings say, as above, so below. So just as there's microscopic life smaller than we can see, there's a macroscopic life which is much larger than we can ever wrap our brains around. 500 years ago, we thought the Earth was flat, that we were at the center of the universe. There was not even knowledge of other galaxies. Now we understand that we are on a pretty much average side of a spiral galaxy on the outer fringes among a sea of billions of other galaxies. And at this point, we still think that we live in a universe. So it's my hope and belief and impression that we will know soon enough that we're part of a multiverse. Multiverse that's infinitely small and infinitely large. And if anyone knows Greg Braden's work, he talks about the Mandelbrot set, which is a mathematical quantum equation that explains a lot of what we're talking about.
Does that mean, Joe, that if I'm doing something self-destructive, if I'm harming myself, am I also harming the universe? Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yes, yes. You know, just as our bodies have 260 to 200 trillion cells all working in unison, all working in harmony for our genetic biological spacesuits to house our consciousness in this reality, in this vibrational frequency, we are still part of that unified field. So in order for us to evolve, we have to not only be in service to others, but we have to understand that we're part of the whole. Just as each cell is part of our whole, we are part of this superorganism that we now call the universe, which I just call divine grace.
Mm-hmm.
It's one infinite energy, one unified field of consciousness. It's all that is, ever will be, you know, came from nothingness to into somethingness. And it's just the yin and the yang and that duality concept. And I was going to cover some of the laws that I think are really critical to the expansion of our consciousness and our growth.
Oh yes, please do, because it's interesting. As you're saying that, Joe, and I'm kind of listening with my spidey sense turned on a little bit. What I'm seeing intuitively as you're saying that is the way that we as humans often experience our birth as coming out of nothing into something. Right. We experience transformation as coming out of nothing into something. We experience when things happen and they surprise us. It's like there was nothing there and there it is. So, yes, please. I want to know more about the laws of the universe and how we can work with them to transform.
Well, let's just look at what's been successful. You know, I have to say I'm not part of the 12-step program anymore. But what I've seen as a counselor, as a healer, as a person, as a friend, what I've seen work more for people than any other modality is the 12-step program. And in the 12-step program, the first step is we admitted we were powerless over whatever that drug was, that our lives had become unmanageable. Now, that's part of the law of duality. That's part of the yin as the yang. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. In order to have male, you need a female. In order to have up, you need down. In order to have left, you need right to define it. In order to know what joy is, we must know suffering. So as you eloquently said, when we're born from nothing into something, and it's from something that we return back to nothing to complete that final ascension or transformation into, you know, our morphic field, our astral bodies, once we leave this three-dimensional world that we're currently in. But that first step is really critical, because we admitted we were powerless, that our lives had become unmanageable. We have to acknowledge what the problem is first before we could become part of the solution. The second step is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That could be a family, a friend, the universe, divine intelligence, creationalism, whatever people hold as something bigger than themselves. The 12 steps are really amazing. I don't want to go through all of them because that's not what my talk is about, but they're really remarkable, because if everybody followed the program, they would do so much work on themselves that really I live every day so joyously and so free. And there's a difference between existing in life and living life passionately. And when you learn that we're part of this, that our consciousness is a malleable energy that creates and manifests all that we could ever want, it becomes such a powerful tool, because then we realize we are infinite immortal beings. Einstein ultimately said we are beings of light. And so at the end of the day, we are an all-powerful, omnipresent, omnipotent, part of the collective consciousness that makes us all up, but we are brilliantly conscious beings. And it's really the biggest kept secret in physics is nobody will talk about consciousness. They talk about the Big Bang, they talk about inflation, but they don't talk about who the guy is that's blowing up the balloon.
Who's blowing up the balloon?
Well, I would call that divine energy, the source. I call him God. My personal savior is Jesus Christ, but the amazing thing is there's no wrong path. Again, it's snowing here in Chicago, which is a good analogy. Just as each individual snowflake is uniquely different, no two alike, it's all from the same source, it's all snow. So even though there are different individual expressions of that one grace, it's all from the same source. So whether you're praying to Buddha, Allah, Krishna, Jesus of Nazareth, the source, divine guidance, creationism, love, whatever people's word is for that, they don't need to be stuck on the politics of the words. They just need to learn that they don't need anybody else to connect to the universe and to manifest everything that they could want in their life.
It is true that from what you're talking about here in terms of manifestation, in terms of getting in touch with these laws of the universe and using them to manifest what we need, we are at the same time, it's a paradox, isn't it? We are powerless, and yet when we realize that, we become infinitely powerful. So how does that relate then to manifestation, to changing our circumstances and creating a life that reflects the changes that we are undergoing?
Yes, that's a great question, and because it all boils down to your perception and your belief systems. And so if you believe the cup is half empty and you see it as half empty, then your outlook and perception and belief system is the cup is half empty. Once you surrender and through powerlessness realize that you're all-powerful being, that's the greatest turning point for somebody in their lives, because that's when they start swinging the pendulum in the opposite direction and start using it to work for them. But it's all about changing your belief systems, and changing your belief systems is pretty hard. It requires that we do self-work. It requires that we peer deep behind the layers of the onion. And most of us are, it's a very unpleasant thing to do, so that's why we have potholes in life. There are opportunities and gifts for us to have that moment so that we can ultimately change our belief systems to learn how to live life passionately, effectively, with the ability to manifest all things at all times. And really, I want to make this very easy, because I want our listeners to be able to take away things that they can very much apply quickly to see results lightning fast. And it's a mixture of five things. Prayer. That prayer could be something as simple as, I am all healing. I am all light. I send love. If we have bad thoughts, we can't fight them. Just say, okay, acknowledge the thought, go in peace. Meditation is very important, because prayer is talking to the source. Meditation is listening to the source. We're, again, so trapped in five-sense reality that we can't let it be quiet for a second. If it's quiet, we get in the car, we throw on the music. We get home, we throw on the TV. We're limiting ourselves to a very narrow frequency range when we are all that ever is and will be, which is consciousness, pure consciousness, which is all frequency ranges. So prayer is very important. They did a study. They took 50 arthroscopic knee surgeries. They had 50 in one group, 50 in another group. Same surgery, same conditions, same predictive factors. And the group that was prayed for healed 80% quicker than the group that was not prayed for. All they had was the person's name. So we don't know how it works, but Bruce Lipton, who's an amazing author, huge inspiration for me, talks about the biology of belief. And this ties in nicely to what we're talking about, because what he articulates is this. We always thought that, okay, cancer's in the family, we have the genes for it, and then we already resign ourselves to the fact that we're predisposed to cancer, so let's live life recklessly. Now we don't need to be responsible because we're going to die anyway. And that's the wrong thinking. That's part of the problem. So prayer helps attune you to the source. Meditation helps to get feedback from the source. And the only way you could do that is stillness, is quietness, is by going to inner space. In all Eastern and spiritual practices, going back to the Vedic traditions, talk about the stillness is important. It's how we, Jesus said, the kingdom of God is within you. So all the answers are in our subconscious, are available to us, as Edgar Cayce proved. Edgar Cayce said, the spirit is the life, the mind is the builder, the physical is the result. And that's a very critical law because it's very easy to understand. We have to change our belief systems. Part of how we do that is through prayer and meditation. Once we change our belief systems, we change our patterns. Once we change our patterns, we change our thinking. Once we change our thinking, we change our character. Once we change our character, we are now ready for the work that's at hand, and that's spiritual evolution, spiritual growth, service to others. So prayer important, meditation important, setting a clear intention is important. Being able to articulate that you don't want to say, I want this job at, say, UPS, when the universe may have something better in store for you. We wouldn't want to limit ourselves to saying, gee, I'd like a job that pays $100,000 a year, because then we're limiting ourselves to $100,000 a year. We just understand that the universe is infinite abundance, and it gives us what we kind of stew with. Whatever rents space in our head the longest is typically what the universe mirrors back to us. So prayer, meditation, setting a clear intention, and doing that a couple times a day is very important. And then following that with action, because in the Alcoholics Anonymous Al-Anon program, they talk about faith without works is dead. And what that means is this. You could pray and meditate and say the rosary all you want, but if you're not doing the work, if you're not doing the action, you are not putting yourself in a position to be blessed by that grace. You will not see manifestation. So it's very powerful that we realize that we're part of this supraorganism that we call the universe. We are all neurons or cells inside this gigantic brain, and our consciousness changes the nature of our universe, and the universe mirrors that back to us. Mm. Now, many of our listeners are aware of certain laws like the law of attraction, the law of karma. There are many laws out there, and they're pretty simple to get, but there's a lot of takes on it. So we could talk a little bit more about that, but I didn't know what direction you wanted to go, Karen.
I love what you're saying. I like the kind of the transformational angle of this, Joe, and I really like the way you tied this all together with how important action is. Because if we listen to all the right, radio shows, or read all the right books, or go hear all the right speakers, and yet we do nothing, we make no changes, other than that we're doing everything the way we've always done it, then we'll continue to experience everything that we've always experienced. And it's moving people to action, I think, that's so important. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am. There's a saying for that, and it's called, you do what you always did, and you get what you always got. That means if we do the same old thing, we're going to get the same old results. So it's very simple. We're either part of the problem or we're part of the solution. There is no victim role. Part of what Bruce Lipton's work talks about is the genetics of the biology of belief, which is this. We thought genes and health was controlled and dictated by our genes, when in fact all the science now is proving that all genes are antennas. Our DNA, that helical structure, is an antenna, and it receives information from our environment, which tells us we can't play the victim role anymore. So what, your father's predisposed to cancer. My father, unfortunately, passed at 50 years old from colon cancer. It's not allowed in my paradigm. If it happens, it happens, but it's not allowed in my paradigm. Now, I understand that this is going to present itself, and people just have to do the best that they can, but tumor doesn't grow overnight. A tumor takes about 20 years sometimes before it even raises a red flag to give you pain or to cause issues to where we realize that it's actually there. It didn't happen overnight. It didn't grow overnight. Cancer is a state of being.
And so when you speak with or work with people with cancer, would you urge them to do more than just traditional Western treatment or allopathic medicine for something like that? Because it is more than just an illness. It is a state of being.
It's a state of being. And the first thing people have to do is let go of the guilt. And we're very good as humans to forgive other people, but we're very hard at forgiving ourselves. And part of that surrender is part of forgiving ourselves. It's part of forgiving our past baggage, so to speak. Once we do that, I would recommend that people take all forms. They seek all kinds of advice. But the lesson to take away from it is, don't just trust one person. I would look into Eastern philosophies, Western philosophies, and marry a practice of prayer, meditation, intention, prayer groups, service to other people, along with marrying it with nutrients, supplements, sound treatment, healing circles, other modalities that they can experience, acupuncture, which helps release the chi throughout the body. I would welcome them to explore all options, because I am firmly convinced that you cannot kill cancer with a poison. You cannot kill cancer with chemotherapy and radiation. Now, I understand if I was put in a position and they're telling me I've got 6 months to live, we're all going to do what it takes to live. So everyone just has to take the circumstances that they have, apply these practices, be part of the solution, and do everything that they can to be responsible stewards of the situation. We don't know what our soul contracts are. I had a very good friend that just passed away at 27 years old. It was kind of a mystery as to what happened, but he had a premonition. His last visit to the hospital, he became a donor. And his heart was donated to a 24-year-old female. His eyes went to a little girl. His kidneys got donated. So his gift will continue to ripple out infinitely and affect the universe in well after our lifetimes. And he died at 27. Was that fair? No. But he was such a strong example. He lived authentically. Lived authentically. That's very important. We have to live in truth. We have to live in the now. Yesterday is just as over as the day we were born. Tomorrow is not guaranteed. In physics, they prove past, present, and future exist simultaneously. All we have is the moment and now. So if we're thinking of the past, we're trapped in the past with baggage. If we're thinking of the future, we're not being creative in the now. These are some of the reasons that we get stuck in five-sense reality and in just taking feedback from the environment. I see that won't work. I feel that won't work. That type of thing, when in reality, we need to tap into the sixth sense, which we have seven endocrine glands throughout the body. Most of your listeners are aware of what the chakra system are, but the chakra system connects the ether to our biological spacesuits via the endocrine glands. Now, what's amazing about the pineal gland, which is located geocentrically in the middle of the brain, it's a peanut-sized gland that has a grain of magnetite in it, and that creates an electromagnetic field around it. And when we die, have out-of-body experiences or ayahuasca experiences like they do in Brazil or other shamanic-type practices, what's happening is the release of DMT, which is what I call the spirit molecule. and it allows us to transition from the material world in this frequency into the ether.
And
so go ahead, Karen. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. I'm an interrupter.
Well, you're doing. You do a great job of facilitating and leading the conversation, because I know I can get off track and passionate about what I talk about. But you know, there's the law of mentalism, which says we're one universal mind. Do unto others as you would have done to you. In other words, hold the door open for somebody, help them, because it's in helping them that we not only help ourselves, but that we help the collective consciousness. The law of vibration, which most people understand, is the law of attraction. Like attracts like. So if we're negative and we're staying in part of the problem and we're ill-treating ourselves, then that's what we get. That's what's mirrored back to us through the universe. Another important law is the law of rhythm. Everything is cyclical. Everything ebbs and flows. You know, we went from the Bronze Age to the Iron Age to the Golden Age, and we will go back to a Bronze Age, an Iron Age, and a Golden Age.
Yeah.
The law of cause and effect. You know, another example that will illustrate this, you know, I had one of my patients when I was a counselor at Serenity House tell me he was a father, and he was going to take the bus home to kill himself. And as he was waiting at the bus stop, a family was walking by, and a young girl just smiled at him. And he said, I don't know what it was, but she changed my life. It told me that there was at least one human out there that wasn't jaded, that wasn't polluted, that loved me. He ended up having other kids and ended up getting remarried, and now he will continue to pass on further generations of people, all because of one action 10 years ago by a young girl smiling at him. So we have a cause and an effect, and it will continue to ripple out infinitely.
And Jill, one of the things that you do in your work is not only educate people so that they can see how much their actions mean, but help them get in touch with Source, get in touch with God, so that they can start making, performing right action, so they can be in tune with the universe and begin to manifest. Where can people find out about where you're teaching, where you're speaking? Where can people learn more about how they can connect with you?
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, Karen. It's really great to be here. I will mention a few things quickly. My website is the best website as far as obtaining information about what I'm involved in and what's up and coming. And there will be a refresh to that website here probably at the end of the week. But it's josephanthonytillman.com, and it's T-I-L-L-M-A-N.com. And I've got a bunch of other links on that page, including my Justin TV website, which is a live 24-hour platform that has a live chat room, and I stream esoteric documentaries. So if anyone's ever bored or working at their desk and they want to have some background on, I play a lot of stuff dealing with angels, guardians, old coast-to-coast shows, consciousness, people like Bruce Lipton, Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, and other spiritual teachers. I will be speaking at this year's Lightworkers Conference, which is thrown by Joanne Macko. This is the ninth year she's done it. It's a wonderful group of people. It will be happening at Benedictine University, September 27th through the 29th, and I'm going to be a speaker this year talking specifically about laws of the universe and my near-death experience and how we tie that in experientially so that people can walk away with a better perspective of how to utilize it.
Wonderful.
I'm also very excited for the monthly Esoterian, which is the oldest, largest spiritual metaphysical magazine in the country. And they are doing some great things, and they have their very first conference May 11th at the DoubleTree in Oak Brook, and they can find information at themonthlyaspectarian.com. And other than that, all information will be distributed on those websites. They could take a look at that and find out more about local events. We have local meetups that meet on a very regular basis. We have about 70 people in our group, and we meet in the suburbs. We meet in the city. So they can go to my website and link to our meetup and join our meetup and also be present for the circles that we have, which happens about once a month, once every 2 months.
Wonderful. Joe, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's a pleasure to talk with you. We didn't even scratch the surface. There's so much there, and I really appreciate your being here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Karen. Thank you so much for your listeners. Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Wonderful. Thank you, Joe, and thank all of you for listening. Together, we are spreading a little more light in the world, and a little more light is always a good thing. Until next time, I'm wishing you peace.